Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to show number 222 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat, I'm host for today's show. Feeling a little rusty, having just got back from a week's holiday on the Greek coast, but nice and relaxed, but maybe a little bit woolly in the head. So I'm relying on today's guest to help keep me on the straight and narrow and give us some really sharp and insightful conversation and get me back up to speed. We've got a really interesting topic actually today. We're going to be talking about how to engage your workforce and drive business success, but with particular insight from the what I call the tougher end of the engagement spectrum. We're going to be talking about some areas and working sectors which perhaps people might consider to be traditionally difficult areas to engage your workforce. So really for the next half hour, I'm hoping that we're going to be able to challenge some perceptions and really share with you some ideas about how you can drive business performance in those areas, but also of course take some learnings from that to other sectors too. So, as I say, I'm Jo. I'm Jo Moffat, today's host, and I'm really pleased to be joined by my guest today, Adam Hutchinson. Adam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi there, Jo. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. So Adam is Managing Director at Belmont Sandbanks Care Group, but I'm going to just ask him now to tell us a little bit about what he's been doing before that and really how that sort of informed your thinking and your insight in this topic, Adam. So perhaps just for our listeners, just give us a little bit of an overview of who you are and where you've come from.
Yeah, of course. I'll do my best to be brief. My name is Adam Hutchinson. I'm the Managing Director of Belmont Sandbanks Care Group, which is traditionally a care-focused organisation with focusing on residential care and home care services for the elderly. But before my time in that, I spent in the telecommunications industry. So very mm-hmm. focused on call centres and sales teams, field salespeople. So mm-hmm. over the last sort of 15, 16 years, that's kind of been my trajectory, was coming from telecommunications and call centres, and then ended up operating in the healthcare industry, which I found some real synergy in the employing and sort of motivation of your workforce across those two industries, which I found really interesting.
Right. Well, that's really what I think we're going to be able to explore in the next half hour, really, isn't it? Because it is those synergies, which are then perhaps translatable into other sectors as well. And I think it's also really about perhaps turning some of the perceptions or misconceptions about these sectors on their head, saying, well, actually, it's not impossible to engage your workforce in areas where people might think it's very, very tough if you approach it in a slightly different way. And that's what I'm very interested to hear from you, because I think you've published a book, haven't you, called Risk Versus Reward?
I did earlier on this year.
That was drawn from your experience in these sectors, was it?
It was, and it was kind of a little bit out of the blue. I'd always kind of talked about my motivations for motivating teams and workforces. When I've all of my roles, that's what I've always been doing. So I kind of always used to write various things that used to go into meetings, or sort of, especially when it came from the telecommunications side, there was lots of sales meetings, lots of sort of these motivational type mornings that used to be had. And when I was in that environment, I always felt that sort of the directors or the people leading those teams, it was always very, very aggressive, very sort of, it wasn't really motivational. It was kind of like, go and do this or else. And when I sort of got to the position where it was me doing that rather than sitting on the other side of the desk, I just decided to change how that was delivered. And over time, I'd written blogs about it, and I was always asked to speak at various events. And I'd put things down into PowerPoint presentations. And over time, somebody just said to me, have you ever thought about putting that out there for people to read? And I said,
really?
I hadn't, because I felt like a lot of it is a regurgitation. So what I tried to do was just to make it very focused on anybody could read it, really, is what I tried to do with it, that it was more for sort of people who were wanted to be motivated, managers and directors of, could all sort of take something from it, rather than it being something, a book that was focused at business leaders only. So I just tried to make it a bit more fun, tried to sort of make sort of this quite title headings in there, and like one of them, one of the title headings of a chapter is State, Not Slate, you know, very much focused on how you approach individuals. So it was kind to try and be a bit more open. And yeah, so ended up putting it down, and over a sort of 18-month, two-year period, got a lot of that stuff down and wrote a book about it and decided to self-publish it. And came out on Amazon in June of this year.
Okay, because I was going to... So did you enjoy the process?
I did, because I spend a lot of time on the train. So I do a lot of my work on the train, so two or three hours here and there every day. It just became my kind of muse, rather than reading a book or watching a film or just, you know, doing the usual that you do is just looking at Outlook for hours. I decided just to put some things down into a Word document, and it just kind of grew and grew and grew. It took a while. It wasn't something that was straightforward. But
Interesting.
It was. I really enjoyed the process, and it made me realise some of the things that actually I would think about them, but maybe I wasn't delivering them in my own work environment. Again, sort of re-engaged me to go, actually, Adam, have you thought about that? It sort of gave me that helicopter view of my own organisation to say, you are doing a lot of things that you're preaching, but some of the things you may need to re-engage again. So it was a really enjoyable process. I loved it.
And valuable, not just from the perspective of publishing it and getting it down on a book, but actually, as you say, helping to re-engage yourself and refocus the way you do things, and presumably the way the people that work with you are also encouraged to do things, I guess.
It's one of the things that's actually in one of the chapters of the book is actually where I say that you should always be constantly reflecting on what you're doing, because it's so easy to plateau. You know, you think that you're doing something really well, and the problem is before you know it, you're not doing it very well anymore, because actually you haven't refocused on it and gone, am I still doing it the best way possible? Because we're in such a fast-changing world that you can never I don't believe you can never continue to do the same thing over and over again for year on year. It's just, you just can't do that, because somebody is going to come in and deliver something different and start either taking your staff or your customers, you know. And what I talk about and what I've always quite passionate about is actually that intrinsic link between the people who work with you in your business to your clients, your customers, because their sort of happiness and how they value the company that they work for is instilled into how they then sell your business or your services onto other people. They're passionate about it themselves. People will want to buy from them or buy from you. Which is, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, whether it's healthcare, telecommunications, car sales, it doesn't matter. We've all got to sell something at some point. It's not direct selling, but there's always an element of something has to be sold. And if you're reliant on the people that work for you to front what you're doing, well, if they're not passionate about it or enjoy working in that environment, then you're missing a massive gap, aren't you?
Absolutely. And I think if you don't, going back to what you were saying about how easy it is to plateau, and you know, do we ask ourselves, am I really doing this the best way possible, because someone else could very well come along and start doing it better or differently. I mean, you've only got to look at the absolute radical, innovative competitors that have appeared in certain sectors in the last few years to realise that, you know, they're literally lurking around the corner. You know, Uber, Airbnb, Amazon are about to start trying to take a big slice out of the UK grocery market. You know, all of these, nobody would ever have imagined these were there a few years ago, would they? And, you know, if you just sit back on your laurels, unfortunately, someone's going to come along and swipe them from underneath you, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's really interesting that you brought up there, because that's really about that exciting entrepreneurial dynamic business. It actually attracts people to want to work for them. Because they're creating something where everyone goes, I want to be involved in that. So not only do you start losing your customers, you start losing the people that have worked for you for a period of time, because they're experienced. They'll go, well, actually, that's really innovative. That's really dynamic. I want to be involved in that. I can see myself in that. So, and I think that's a lot of people have missed that opportunity, But you see, you look at people, Google and Amazon and these places, especially when they're in the UK. You look at their perks programs, you look at their office environments, you look at how they handle promotion and success and next steps within careers. If you take that out, you can see why it's such an attractive place for people to go, because it's very much it's taking really, really subtle details and saying, this is really important to us. How important is it to you? And analysing who comes in and saying, well, it's not just about money. It's about where they work, what environment they're in, what other people they're working with, what can we offer them outside of the 9-to-5 or the, you know, to get them to deliver for us. And it's really interesting. In the book, there's a piece that I wrote about, like an example that I use with Netflix, because you brought these up. I thought I'd bring it up. And Netflix have this culture program that they put people through. And it's so powerful. And you can understand why somebody would want to go and work there, what they would get in return. And then you can see that Netflix themselves as a business in return are going to get so much from the people that they employ. That is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting, isn't it? Because these organisations will, whilst you may not look at them, one may not look at them and think, oh, yes, I can see how they'll be a competitor to me in the business world. They are absolutely a competitor to you when it comes to attracting talent and retaining talent. So, you know, and that's the key. And so interesting. Let's just talk a little bit about residential healthcare, care services and call centres and those sorts of teams. Absolutely. I mean, what would be the similarities in terms of the challenges that employers face in those sectors, Adam?
The biggest challenge that I found, and the biggest challenge, the sort of primary synergy between them, is the multitude of competition. So there is always another business that you're competing against that's close enough for your employees to go and work for them. One of my residential sites that we have in the southeast of England, I have three others on the same road. So they're in walking distance. So, and they all employ 30 to 40 staff. So what am I doing differently to keep them? And it's the same with the call centre environments. One of the larger call centres that I ran in the West Midlands, we had five other call centres within the same city centre, which, you know, got the same train, same parking that people would come to work. So the issue was is that you always got this wide-reaching element of competition who are always looking for staff, because retention is notoriously poor in both of those sectors. So people were constantly moving. And I did an analysis in both when I went in and said, well, what's the primary reason people move? Primary reason people were moving was because they thought they were going to a role that was going to give them more money. In the healthcare sector, it was normally the difference between 10 or 20 pence an hour people were moving for. And in the telecom sector, it was about the commission structure was better. But essentially, both of them, as a standard rate of pay, were considered to be in the lower end. You know, you have to put in a lot of hours in healthcare to make it a good high-end salary. And in the telecom sector, you had to hit a lot of commission to be able to, again, to make it over that. So the synergy was that, really. It was very easy to lose workforce, and they were constantly being attracted to something else because of
always being tempted
money.
Away. Yeah, always be always the grass was always going to look greener, even in a relatively small. I mean, gosh, that's a relatively small thing in healthcare, isn't it? 10 to 20 pence an hour difference.
Yeah. When you're talking, when I started working, it was 2010, so I'm plucking at the thing, I might be wrong, but I'm sure that the minimum wage in the UK at that time was £5.93, if I remember rightly. And you would have found that maybe 35 to 40% of your workforce would have been on that, £5.93 an hour. So if they were then offered £6.10 an hour, and you add that up over 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year,
then over
52, it becomes substantial. So that, but you know, looking at it like that, you know, you'd think to yourself, well, it's not much. People surely could do that, but obviously there's reasons that different businesses didn't do it. I don't know the answer to that, but it was looking at that and saying, well, okay, let's take money out of the equation on both of them, because why compete all the time on money? Create something that gives them different reasons for choosing whether the grass is greener or not. whether
okay,
they're
so
going
how
to
do
say,
you do
oh, you're
that,
my. Well, this is what I was saying. So we looked at environment. So how is it when people come to work, do they have a PC that works? This is how simple we get, I used to go down to. Do they have a PC that works? Do they have a phone on the desk that works? Do they have access to stationery? Do they have a kitchenette where they can actually have something rather than having to go outside? This is how small when I started doing it. Then
right.
we looked at for telecommunications, for example. One of the first things I did was create a games room in our office. So I asked I was a sales director at the time, I didn't own the company, and I asked the managing director, can I have some budget to partition the bottom end of the office off, which we don't use, and turn it into a games room? So we put Sky Sports in there, an Xbox, PlayStation, a radio, and some books, and some leather sofas. That was basically what we did. And that was none of our competitors had that. Tiny little thing. But when people came in, it was kind of like, oh, I can have a breakout and I can go and sit there rather than going down the street or sitting on my phone or, you know. It sounds really small, but this is what I talk about in my book as well. These little things start to mount up. I just think it's really important that people should have the tools to be able to do the job. And you'll be surprised at how many places people go and they don't. I've done consultancy work in call centres before, and I won't name anything, but I've been to some places where people haven't had their own desk for 5 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Why would you not have things ready when people have been employed? And those
really
little things make
me.
A huge difference to how you're motivated.
So that's
what I'm talking about. It's those little steps. Obviously, you're not only going to do one. You've got to do a multitude of them. But those are just some examples of where I started. And then we started to build on that. You know, we creating monthly or quarterly events for people where it's, you know, either taking them out as a team bonding where they just go and have a curry and a drink together as a team, or whether you have some of these business events that you take people to where they do sort of team building type exercises, things like that, where they're starting to be engaged. Because again, it's differentiating. So when they go to an interview with somebody else and they offer them a pay structure that might make them an extra £800 a year, but actually they're going, I'm not going to get any of this outside bit. Is it worth that step? And there's nothing to say that they wouldn't get that £800 if they approached the business and talked about it differently. If they were value to the company, they would listen to them. But again, it's about giving them other alternatives to make them think, well, I don't need to go and look because I'm happy in the experience that I've got. And that was just something that was really important. And the synergy was the same across healthcare and telecommunications. Is how do I keep people? How do I make them think, well, I don't need to look because I feel like this is giving me everything I needed to do. And that's not that I'm not saying that you're restricting money. You're just saying you're giving them alternatives. I was one of the first, particularly in the area that I operated in the southeast, one of the first to introduce a program of incentives for employees. Nobody really did it in the healthcare sector. I remember when I approached people about it to sort of sanity check on whether they did it, not many people sort of had ever even thought about it.
Right. How does that work then? How do you? Because I mean, if we move on to talk about the healthcare sector, residential care. I mean, the average perceptions that most people will have is that this is an area where people are very they're poorly paid, overworked, undervalued, and we can't employ enough people in the UK who want to do this work, and there's going to be a significant problem in not many years' time with not enough people working in the sector to look after us all as we get older. So how do you apply those learnings in that sector then, Adam?
Well, it was a challenge at first, I'll be honest, because I kind of came at it expecting people to be like rejoiced by this, you know, utopian that I decided to do. But obviously, nobody really saw it like that. They saw it quite cynically because it was weren't used to, I suppose, that happening. I took over the company from, it was a retiring business.
So traditionally run, traditional model.
It took a while. But once we started to introduce some of the perks or some of the sort of incentives and change in attitude, it really worked. But it actually started not with incentives or anything like that. It actually started with a change of approach. You know,
okay.
I used to go to work in a suit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when you go into a call center environment, going into with a suit and a tie, that's what I did. But in the healthcare sector, that seemed a barrier straight away. So I learned very quickly that I've got to be more down to earth and more approachable for people. So I thought that was really mm-hmm. important. And it meant that people could have a conversation with me, knowing mm-hmm. people's background, knowing people's families. So mm-hmm. you can have a conversation with them. It means a massive mm-hmm. thing when they're just mm-hmm. talking to staff and saying hello and how's the daughter and, you know, how was your holiday? What did you get up to? Little things like that.
Yeah.
And I started
yeah.
to build on that though, by creating, and I know it probably sounds very silly to some people who are listening, but, you know, the environment that I went into didn't have any of that. You know, mm. completely sort of shut off. So
yeah.
that sort of really gave us a footing to understand. Then we introduced simple birthday card for everyone on their birthday. So
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody had a birthday card from the company saying, you know, happy birthday, tiny little thing. Then we started to look at incentivizing the teams for various things that they were doing. So whether it be getting good results on their inspections, we were rewarding with nights out or trips. Then we were building a development program, which was something that was really interesting. So when we started, we realized that anybody in a sort of senior role, sort of deputy manager, manager, regional managers, were all recruited externally. So about 4 years ago, just scrapped it. And we opened the door to say, we want people from within to do these roles. So we
okay.
created a program of saying, you know, this isn't about your hourly rate. And it isn't
mm-hmm.
about just moving around in the same role. It's saying, if you step up and you mm-hmm. want the extra responsibility, we'll give you that, which will be monetary rewarded, but you will also be rewarded with a long-term training. And
mm-hmm.
now three of our sites are run by people who were care workers, sort of standard level, entry level, are actually now managers of their own homes. So they
you've created a clear career path for people, rather than them, all they ever saw was people being brought in from outside over them.
Yeah, and that was
yeah.
I learned that the hard way, because the first
mm-hmm.
sort of 6 months I was there, I had to recruit somebody, and I understood
mm-hmm.
how this. So much goes on in a care home environment that people don't realise. How much paperwork, how much responsibility there is in it. I think it's one of the hardest roles in the country is managing a care home nowadays, because
yeah.
there is so much that goes on. It's so much critical analysis that happens externally.
Yes.
And it's really important to get that right, because they're not only managing people, they're also managing families in an emotive process, not in a business
yeah.
transaction. It's a personal, emotive conversation. Then the
mm-hmm.
external regulations, then financial reviews and all this sort of stuff, and then constant maintenance of a big building. So
mm-hmm.
they take on a lot of responsibility. So it's about, when you bring somebody in from externally who's got ideas from elsewhere, it doesn't fit with your culture, especially when, like I said, I was always trying to ingrain a different type of culture. It was really difficult. So getting
mm-hmm.
people to go into that process was really, really empowering for them. And like I said, it's meant that it's improved our retention. It's meant that people want to stay with us, and those people that want to go into those roles. It means that when we look to acquire other businesses, we've got people who we can, you know, we can take from one site, put them in another, and they can go, this is how we do it our way. We'd like
yes.
to, you know, to get you to buy into that. And rather than me telling them, I can just ask somebody else to go and do that, and they will happily go and do it. Almost like an onboarding process.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's really
yeah.
important.
Yeah, this is the way we do things here, kind of.
So it's all those little intricate pieces that started
mm.
to make a difference. And it wasn't,
mm.
we weren't having a conversation about money.
Mm.
We weren't having the monetary conversation. The money increases came with it, but we didn't start talking about hourly rates or annual salaries, or we started
yeah.
talking about how can we make this a different place for people to work and want
and,
to
and,
come to work.
And have you seen, significant improvement in retention levels, and
yeah, our retention is below 10%, which for the
right.
industry is massive. The average in the industry, I think, is 32 or 33%. It's horrendous.
Right, gosh,
the healthcare
yeah.
sector. So we have you know, a lot of the people that we recruit are from the local area. We have a lot of people who we don't sort of go far and wide to get staff. It's working in that sense. I'm not saying it's a utopia, but it works.
Gosh, I mean, that's significant. And of course, in the sector that you're in, retention of your staff has a big impact on your patients, doesn't it? Because they are, by and large, I know this from personal experience because my mother is in a care home, and they are, you know, they're not very good at dealing with change. So if the staff are constantly changing, that's not going to be great for patients, is it? Or residents.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, and because it's absolutely paramount. Because it's the most people business, because you are reliant on supporting somebody through a difficult time, but making it a really, really positive time. And that's key. Mm. And having different staff constantly churning, constant change, it just doesn't bode for a good experience for people. And then you have increasing complaints or increasing, you know, sort of problems, and you have to move clients on, or they, you know, family might wish them to move, and that's just not going to work, you know. Yeah. And it's much better that you can keep a really, really well thought of, really highly motivated group of people who can, you know, really add value to your residents. And that's vital.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's just part of the positive outcome for your residents and your patients, isn't it? So we're very rapidly coming to the end of our show, actually, Adam. But staggering, isn't it? Quickly finish up with a couple of things, really. You've talked with a great deal of personal passion, and this is, you know, your vision has come from your own personal journey professionally and your own experience. Is it your job to make this happen in your business, or if people are listening to this show, does this have to be driven from the top, or is this more? I'm getting a feeling this is more of a sort of cultural thing that you try and get everyone to understand that actually small things, but many of them, can make a difference.
Oh, it's absolutely a company-wide thing, but I always think it has to start somewhere. You know, so sadly, I think it has to start from somebody who has the ability to be able to direct that vision or that passion.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily have to be right at the top. It could be somebody who's within the business that steps up and says, this is how I think we should be doing things. And that should be seen as a real positive. It's very much about empowerment and allowing people to understand that culture. And hopefully they will take it on. You know, I love it when I get to the stage where people ring me and say, what about if we do this? Can we do this? And I go, yeah, just do it. That's absolutely fine. You know, I'm happy for you to do that. And in certain areas, we've got to a stage where people don't even ask anymore because they know that that's something that we should be doing. And they start to tell me, which is great. Because as long as we're making the positive outcomes for people, and that's really, that in this side of the industry, that's really important.
Right, so it's almost becoming contagious, really, isn't it? It's establishing the basics and then hoping, and then get making it contagious, and then empowering people to take responsibility for taking that on. And it must be very gratifying when you see that happen.
Oh no, absolutely, and you get it rewarded back in spades. I mean, because going through this sort of process allows you to get a real. Well, I found, because it's really important to me to get a work to home life balance with business, because being totally ingrained in everything and weaved into everything within your business means that you work 24/7, 365. And some people don't want to be that way, and that's absolutely fine. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Personally, I think there has to be a balance with it. So by enabling the teams around you to, you know, you put trust in them, they do reward you back, and it means that they can continue the business without you having to be totally focused and hands-on every element, you know. And that, I think that's really important, even down to sort of smaller elements, that you actually think, do I need to be involved in that? Because actually, how can I grow my business to the next, or take it to the next level, if I'm spending 24/7 focusing on things that actually I don't need to be doing? And that was something that I put and really believe in, is that to be able to grow, you know, leaders or owners of businesses and need to realise that they don't need to be involved in everything. And some people allow them to take those responsibilities on. I mean,
Perfect. I mean, I was going to ask you what one thing can we take away from this, and I think you've just said it perfectly without me asking you, which is just as well because we've run out of time. But it is about putting trust in your teams, isn't it, and trusting them to do it and to deliver. Thank you,
it's
Adam.
Really
it's been fabulous, really stimulating conversation. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And I need to say goodbye now. So thank you and goodbye. Thank you.
Thanks.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.